A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Future's so bright. We got to discuss trades. Oh, I should have...
Oh, there we go.
There's the podcast title.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Good day, this is Ken. With me are Jeff and Adam from Obstructive View. How's everybody doing today?
Doing great.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Yes. Yes. Had a few travel and softball-related snafus this week, but I think the days are going to get better because I think we have some things to talk about. First of all, we got to go back to the first half that was and the All-Star break and all that and just try to think of why is this team so bad right now? Because they're not supposed to be. But it's all getting better because some trades actually happened that I hope you guys are happy to discuss. How's that for a plan?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
That's great. But first, what was your softball snafu?
Oh, I slid. And I was not allowed to slide, apparently. But it was like, think about it this way. The girl is standing right in front of the bag, which, as you guys know, MLB is cracking down on obstruction. Of course, this is not MLB, but like, what am I supposed to do? Just plow over her? No. The funny thing is both my wife and the various softball teammates of mine said, yes, you should have just plowed through her. And I was like, but I'm not an asshole, so I felt like I should have slid. But according to the rules, a slide is an automatic out. So even though I was safe, I was out. And that just didn't make any sense to me. Anyway, some skin is missing and it's still healing, but I'll be okay.
Yeah, that's the discouragement against sliding in our league is that you will just shred your leg.
Yes.
Wear pants.
A chivalrous automatic out, though.
But, yeah, I think it's going to get better, and hopefully the Cubs will as well. So let's get into it. I guess we should start with the fact that the Cubs did do a couple of trades, and are they even selling anymore? Because if you guys saw the statement, and this is extremely strange. I've never seen a statement like this before from any club, including the Cubs. But basically, Jed Hoyer, president of baseball operations for the Chicago Northside Baseball Club, said, as we have stated, our goal is to add players that will help us not just this season, but into the future. In the last 2 days, we feel we have worked toward that by trading for those types of controllable players. Acquiring Paredes adds a proven bat to our lineup immediately and for years to come. He did not mention Nate Pearson, which I think is more of a reliever project, but both of these trades are interesting and suggest that they're not actually selling, which I don't think they ever actually said, although we were all expecting them to because the Cubs were just so horrible this year.
Yes, no notes. part of me wonders who the audience of that announcement really was. Like, on one side, I can see it being, all of the Cubs brass and higher ups being like, we really need to explain this to our fans who are expecting a binary buy or sell, and we need to explain what we're doing to give them clarity, and we really want people who pay money to come to Wrigley really have confidence in what we're doing moving forward. Or was the audience from Jed to the Ricketts family being like, look, not unloading salary and we're not, you know, getting rid of all these big contracts, but there's a reason, because we still want to be good. So that's why we're not just unloading everybody who makes the big bucks in order to get a bunch of people who will cost us nothing and make us good 3 years from now. I really don't know.
I don't know. I mean, maybe 8-6, the team is still pretty good, but their entire bullpen got injured and they're just going to punt for a year. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a while for me. What's the record anyway? It's like 50-56 or something crazy like that, right?
51-56.
Oh, okay. So 50-56 before today's win, which, yes, they won against a pretty good Kansas City Royals team who are on the up and up. And, you know, this is the same Royals team that got a bunch of guys who are like, oh, okay, these are interesting acquisitions. They're probably trying to be good. They extended Bobby Witt Jr. to that really big deal, which you're like, well, I didn't know Kansas City had that much money. But anyway, the point is that this is a Kansas City team that is probably going to the playoffs unless something catastrophic happens. And yet the Cubs, just like they did with Baltimore before the All-Star break, what made us like think maybe this is something, maybe this is a turnaround. They're doing it. And like Jeff said, 51-56 is not catastrophic. This is not White Sox bad. This is like they're within jumping distance of the third wild card spot. This is doable. So maybe they just decided, hey, this team on paper is supposed to be better than last year's team. And like Adam said, yeah, they're paying all this money for these contracts because these guys are supposed to be good. And it just so happens that they played suckily so far this season. So maybe they'll stop sucking. Who knows?
Yeah, and really the guy they traded here, like Morel, has been the only guy who's really taken a significant step back, though I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. Well, I guess the Midland field has too, but still, like, they're like, well, maybe he just needs a change of scenery. Certainly, I expect him to be the, you know, AL MVP once the Rays turn him around in 2 years. But, you know, everyone else, they're like, you know, okay, there have been injuries. You know, it's been disappointing from a, like, a, I don't know, sequencing standpoint. Though I guess you could say the same thing about Morel. But, you know, aside from the catching position, they're kind of okay everywhere. If they had a healthy bullpen, this would look like at least an above-average team. I don't think they'd be World Series contenders, but maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid here, though.
No, I mean, I don't think you are. I think the offense looks so bad because the bullpen has been so beaten down. That's basically what it boils down to. You know, you have 5 or 6 blown saves that don't go, you know, the way that they went. Where if the Cubs had held on to those 5 or 6 blown saves, including the one that happened in the first game of this series, the Cubs would be 5 games over instead of 5 games under. And the discussion would be, oh, if they could only add a couple of bats, then they'd really look great moving forward. So that to me, it is, you know, it's exhausting when you see so many failed scoring opportunities and so many, you know, so many failed scoring opportunities and so many guys who just aren't fully up to their potential, like Dansby and Morel and anybody wearing a catcher's mitt. Those things look bad, but they look 100 times worse when you don't hold on to wins that you have all but secured at the end of the game.
Whatever game's a one run game.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just looking up because I remember this exercise from last year, the Cubs clutch stats off of the Fangraphs WPA numbers, and they're actually not bad. I mean, they're above average. So, yeah, I think it's bullpen starters have been great. I got no complaints about the starters. Even Kyle Hendricks has looked mostly good since his return for the injury. But yeah, the bullpen is just, man, bullpens are gonna bullpen. Get some more arms. I guess. Maybe not this year, though.
This year, I guess they traded away a pretty good arm in Hunter Biggie. He came up for a couple of, you know, cups of coffee appearances in his major league debut. Seemed pretty impressive, and now he's gone. So it almost makes me wonder why the Rays took him. And, like, I guess before this year, none of us really had thought of Hunter Biggie all that much. But as soon as the Rays come knocking, you're just like, it's that tweet, right? Is it Sam Miller who did that tweet? Like,
yeah, it was Sam Miller.
Great trade by the Rays. Who'd they give up and who'd they get back or something like that? It's incredible. But, you know, the Rays have screwed up before. And I think this year it finally caught up to them because, like, basically every single one of their arms is broken this year. So it's pretty bad for them. And now they need an extra arm to play with until that breaks, too. Hopefully that doesn't happen because I wish the best for all of them, especially Christopher Morel, who I think that was the major surprise. It's like, okay, yeah, he's been hitting the snot out of the ball. It just keeps going to a guy, or it's a warning track power, or it hits in the dirt and it goes right to another guy. Whatever. Like, he's been one of the most unlucky players in the league so far this year. And some of that is just, like, not changing your approach, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, there was such big potential there, and you really wish he could have stuck with the Cubs because he was just such a cool guy. He's so friendly, so accessible by the fans, and he just shows such good emotion, and you're just sad because, like, now, except for Pete Crow Armstrong, this team's kind of bland right now. It's just too mellow, I think.
Yeah, and Morel this year is really the classic. If I would have told you, guy, because if I would have told you at the beginning of the season that he would drastically improve his plate discipline, that he would cut down on his strikeouts, that he would increase the number of walks he took, like, you would never in a million years guess, yeah, and his numbers are going to go to crap. Like, how is it happening? He's hitting it more. He's still, you know, hitting home runs, not really at the pace of last year, considering that month and a half he took off, you know, to begin last year. But It doesn't compute. And the fact that, like, the Rays wanted him, like, that was really who they were pursuing in the trade. That should, like, everybody who was so sick of Morel had to have had their ears perk and their eyebrows raise above their heads. Like, wait, I must be wrong. Like, obviously I overreacted when I said he was crap, because if the Rays want him, there has to be a reason, and I'm sure we'll find out why. And I don't know who develops players better than the Rays, who gets more out of their players than the Rays do. So in that vein, I'm excited for Morel. I mean, it's not I know he loved playing in front of the fan. He loved performing in front of the Chicago crowds. But I kind of like the idea that he can go into a little bit more of a low pressure situation where I think he has a chance to regain the joy that he has for playing and maybe get back on the right track as far as what he needs to do to really enjoy playing the game and seeing the results that he's used to seeing without losing the progress that he made in his familiarity with the strike zone.
Yeah, he seems like the ideal Rays trade target. Totally not surprised that he's who they would go after on this team. I don't know if they could fix his defense, but I think they could fix his swing, or maybe just regression will fix his swing finally. I don't know.
You think I don't know the Rays as much as I should, but I feel like some of their middle infielders aren't that good. And Morel, before they shuttle him off to third base, because, you know, the Cubs basically already have all-star or at least Gold Glove caliber middle infielders, and that's why he can't play there, right? So now with the Rays, maybe that's not a problem and he can go back to second base because he was usually a pretty good second baseman. So maybe he doesn't have that problem anymore.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that helps him out.
So, yeah, and he could go back to being kind of the super utility guy who they put almost anywhere on the field. If you look at his stats and Baseball Reference, you know, his defensive stats, without looking at any of the actual statistics and you just look at where he played, it's so weird to see like every number, like every infield position is on all his previous years. And this year it's 5/DH. That's it. So, you know, maybe just the versatility, like going back to not knowing where he's going to play every day, maybe it doesn't improve his defense, but maybe he gets a little bit out of his head as far as, you know, taking all that third base challenge to the plate with him every time. You know, who knows? I don't know. But, yeah, I think the Cubs' approach to winning, Morel, if he can't play a defensive position, really doesn't gel with what the Cubs are trying to do, which is to stress defense, especially up the middle, but really all over the place, and really use that DH slot as a rotating rest spot for whichever infield or outfielder they want to give a day off in the field, you know, not really having one DH guy, everybody on the team being a plus defender and a plus hitter. I think that's the model, and Burrell really wasn't fulfilling either one this season. So when he's occupying that DH slot for most of the time that he's playing, it really changes up what the Cubs are hoping to do. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that this move does not prevent someone like Matt Shaw from coming up and joining the team. I think if we learned anything from 2015 and 2016 rosters was that having too many talented infielder outfielders was a good thing. When it was like, where are we going to be able to play all these guys? Joe Maddon found a way. They were different lineups every day, mixing guys around, giving different guys rest, and it kept everybody fresh and everybody sharp. And I don't see any reason why the Cubs can't have a bench that is solid with guys who can really field and can really hit, not just glove guys like Mastroboni and Madrigal, and, you know, a hacker type with wisdom, you know, filling out the bench in the years moving forward. You got to have guys who really can hit and really can field as reserves, not just that top layer. And then you go to like specialty guys, novelty guys.
Yeah, that's a very good segue, sir, because like as soon as they traded Morel, like anytime Morel is the DH, the bench is basically all outfielders. Oops, all outfielders. Like they've changed it up a little bit because Wisdom can sort of kind of play the corner infield. You know, Bodie's there, which I guess is kind of like a not so nice statement the way I said it, but he is there. He's versatile and he has been.
He takes that space.
No. He's not just taking up space. He's actually being productive, I think, in the limited opportunities that he's had, which is kind of nice to see because, you know, they paid him all that money that he asked for and he's still getting it. And it's nice to know that, you know, he can still produce, because I was kind of like stumping for Bodie to just make his way back to the team all this time, like when he was rotting in Iowa and doing his Bodie thing, and just like, well, it's the last year of your deal, whatever. Mastroboni's there. But now when you come back to the trade, like why was Chris Morel traded? Because now you have a legitimate third baseman in Isak Paredes, who can also hit the ball very, very far. I think there's some like kind of consternation over whether his profile translates to Wrigley or whatever, because he's a very pole-happy a home run hitter, and they were afraid of the deep well in Wrigley, right? Or the wind or whatever. And everybody has to deal with that. But this is a guy with legitimate power. He's had a good track record over the past few years. And He can't play third base, arguably better than at least Christopher Morel. So now that you have this guy manning third base on the rig, you can open up that DH spot for a recovering Cody Bellinger or say a Suzuki so that Bellinger can play right field or something like that. Because like I think a lot of us have been kind of disappointed with what Say has done in the outfield lately. And I think he's better than what he is, but there's something weird going on with the defense where every now and then somebody has a brain fart. And I feel like that's a coaching thing, but I also can't guarantee that that's all that it is. Maybe it's just like some random crap, like, you know, a dandelion got in his eyes or something. I don't know. But it's just something that kind of, you notice it. You notice the lapse in defense, and you notice it even more when it leads to runs being scored.
There was the play on Friday night where, you know, Saya just kind of misread it initially, and it cost him a step or two, and that was what he would have needed to catch a ball that could have ended the inning when the Royals caught and overtook the Cubs late in the game. But that kind of thing happens to a lot of outfielders on the type of ball that was hit. Like I think you start to see Pete Crow Armstrong and his ability to read the ball off the bat and get a lightning quick break on everything, and you start to expect that from mere mortals, and it's not how it works. Like, guys misread balls initially all the time for, you know, a multitude of reasons. So Saya is not an elite defender, but I think the timing of some of his miscues and imperfections has just been especially painful and damaging sometimes. But overall, I still think he's a solid defender, you know, especially when you include his arm and his speed. Council made a comment about Crow Armstrong the other day that sometimes because he is able to get to so many balls so quickly, the balls that he almost catches are nearly impossible for anybody else. So a lot of times that's what stands out. And then when you look at the defensive metrics, like, oh, wow. He's in like half the games of the other guys, he's saving more runs. And I think Suzuki has some of that too, where his speed is really elite. You know, for a guy of his size, he has deceptive speed. And so I think sometimes that too puts him in the vicinity of making a catch that seems like it's a little bit more routine than it is, because his speed gets him there faster. Not as quickly as what PCA does, but still, he covers a lot more ground than I think we realize. And sometimes I think that causes a negative perception of what he's doing out there rather than what should be a real positive.
Yeah, I appreciate that point of view. I think, you know, I really want Saya to be successful. He's been hitting very well. I think for the most part, he's a perfectly competent right fielder. I think you're right. Like, what PCA has done has super spoiled us to an extent that is probably unfair to the other outfielders. But also, I think there's a defensive alignment that, you know, rotates in Bellinger and even Talkman and allows Saya to just think about batting. And then they can continue to rotate people into that DH spot. And now that Paredes is here, you can give Saya and the other outfielders the kind of DH rotation that we saw earlier in the year again. So that does help a lot. And I do hope that he does better. And I think that's a kind of a hope as well. Like, are they even selling anymore? I don't think they ever were committing to selling, despite the fact that we all expected them to based on the record. But then you look at the record, and after this Royal Series, as of Sunday when we're recording, they're going to the Reds, and the Reds are doing their own struggles and already thinking about selling. Okay, so that's a series that theoretically the Cubs, who are, you know, pissed off that their friend Christopher Morel is gone and has received an injection from a new guy, might be more motivated to play. Like, they've seen what the front office is trying to do, and perhaps there's a motivation. After the Reds, they're back home, and now they got to deal with two pretty good teams in the Cardinals and the Twins. So I think if they can navigate that gauntlet, the rest of the month gets super easy, except against the Guardians, who, like, I don't think any of us expected Cleveland to be this good. So, but the rest of the month is just like, okay, we should be able to win these.
I don't know, I guess the Pirates are kind of going to get in that too. Maybe if we miss Skeens.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, who was the other guy? There was Skeens and there was some other guy.
Jared Jones, I think.
There you go. Okay. And so two out of three of them are going to be tough hitting matchups, and they have to do it on the road. So maybe all they need to do is, like, score first and score many and kick them out of the game. It's baseball. It could happen. Let Pete Crow Armstrong lead off and, you know, start the game off with his brand of chaos. See what happens.
Yeah. And if they don't get rid of any starters, if the Cubs don't get rid of any of their starting pitchers, then it's you always have a shot no matter who you're facing on the mound, because everybody that comes up in the rotation has the type of stuff that can shut the other team down if they're on. So it does, when you have a starting rotation as strong as what the Cubs have, you always have a chance to win series no matter what pitcher's on the mound. All you need is to scrape across a couple of runs at some point during the game. And, you know, sun shines on the Cubs' dog ass every now and then.
Every other game, they decide to score like 7 to 9 runs. But, I do like that idea. I think you brought up a good point about the starting pitching, because there are so many rumors talking about, do the Cubs want to trade Jameson Taillon at basically his highest point as a Cub? Like, he's been strung together so many quality starts in a row, and people are like, I don't think he's going to be able to do this again next year. And I personally am thinking, why not? Why shouldn't he be able to take his success and move it forward, even if he's, like, lost a tick or two on his fastball? Like, he seems to be able to know how to pitch. And I think Adam and I, we talked about this last time. He has kind of the annoying habit that I've seen from a lot of Cub pitchers of hanging those off-speed pitches in the middle of the zone where it could get punished. And somehow, kind of like vintage Kyle Hendricks, like, those middle pitches don't get destroyed. And you just have to wonder, is it luck, or do they just know how to change speeds enough to miss the barrel? I really don't know. The other rumor that I've seen is trading Justin Steele, and that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, because he's under club control for such a long time, and he'll be just relatively affordable. And, you know, it's one of those things that you have to think about, because it is part of the game, even though they probably should be paid more and they shouldn't be, quote, controlled like that. But it is part of the game, and you don't get rid of somebody like that who has Cy Young caliber stuff. So I don't know where these trade rumors are coming from, especially if it looks like they're adding. Because if they are doing, as Jed Stamen says, to build for not just this year but going forward, those are the guys that you want to keep around. And obviously, Kyle Hendricks, his contract is pretty much done. So I doubt that they'll keep him past this year. They might give him a front office position, in which case I say, yay, he's pretty smart. He knows what's up. So good for him. But I don't think he's going to pitch for this club next year. And if the other guys who are on the IL right now, and Ben Brown and Jordan Wicks and so on, come back up, great. you know, that's even more depth, and it could push Assad down to the bullpen where I think he can play up a little bit. And so there's a lot of considerations here where if you just keep everybody, because really, who are you going to sell at this point that makes sense for the future of this club?
That's kind of an interesting point, actually. I mean, trading Justin Steele is crazy talk, banana pants. But Tyone, like, the Cubs could deal him just because they'd be dealing from a position of strength. Like you said, I mean, they've got a lot of, even with, you know, Hendricks leaving, you know, I think they have a pretty decent starting pitching depth. So if they could get, say, you know, decent catcher out of the deal, it might be worth. But it could just be that they're just floating stuff. I mean, this front office going back to Theo has been a pretty tight-lipped ship. So to hear all of these rumors could just be just them just kind of feeling out what the market is, because it is kind of a weird year.
Do you ever wonder if Jed, as soon as he hears a rumor, just says, nope, not doing that one. Let's go for another one. Like, I'm not making the deal unless nobody knows about it. That's like so many of the like trades and signings that he's made. Like, free agent signing, it's a little bit tougher to keep under wraps. Except for, you know, Shota, it was like he'd been in Chicago for months. And like, oh yeah, okay, let's announce it. But you know, the trades just like come out of nowhere, and almost like that's the point, is to make a deal that nobody sees coming. And of course, the Craig Council thing was like, you know, not a whisper of that possibility had been mentioned. And that was pretty big news. So it seems like he gets off on not just making deals that pay off more than they should, but making deals that no one would have guessed were going to happen.
Yeah, none of you guys thought that they were going to get Isak Paredes, right? Because that was out of the blue. And it was like, oh my God, what's going on? So you're selling, oh my God.
Every reaction on Twitter was, what?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah. You think Theo still has control of that at Jet Hoyer account where he said he was spanking it?
Oh, I'm sure he does.
And maybe he'll like log back in and do like a new gotcha tweet.
Spanking it in a parking lot in front of Dollar General.
That was the other guy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Best fight footage I've ever seen.
I mean, you can't come back from that. You just can't. It's like, well, first of all, I'm winning, and second of all, you jerked off in the parking lot, so.
Yeah, you can't come back from that, or at least not for another 15 minutes, half an hour.
Oh, they did designate him for assignment, so now he's done. They basically told him to beat it.
Done.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm out!
Okay, so if Jeff, you're right about the 51 and 56 thing, that means they have 55 games left. So 51 wins, they got to get to at least 84. That's 33. 33 and 22 is what they're looking at to end the season, to have a legitimate shot at the last wild card. Think they can string it together, especially with a relatively easy August?
No.
Fair enough.
It's funny because I hearken back to at the end of April, early May, how many people, including myself, were like, you know, I had expected the Cubs would probably win around 85, 88 games. But seeing how they look now, I'm thinking it's probably going to be more like, you know, mid 90s. So I will be the one to say, sure, they can play 11 games over 500 to end the season and maybe turn things around, get in the mix. Do I think they will? No, but I still here's my bottom line. I'm going to get on my soapbox just a little bit because so many people are like, I'm checked out of this season. Like, I'll see you in 2025. For me, when October, November roll around and there's no more baseball, with the exception of 2016 and that aftermath, once the season is over, it is a gloomy, dark time. And I personally believe that no baseball is a lot worse than bad baseball. And every single day, no matter where the Cubs land in the standings, there is the possibility of something good, something fun, something thrilling happening in a game that makes me glad that I'm watching it. And it's more likely that I'm going to see something good, something worthwhile, something that really makes me happy to be alive watching a baseball game than it will just living my life. Sorry that reflects on my life poorly, but I love watching baseball even when it isn't the best baseball out there. It's still better than no baseball. So I will hang on to hope for as long as it exists that something better can come out of this season. But even when they are mathematically eliminated, if that is to happen, I'll still be glad that they're playing, because once that ends and all you have is Bears football, I'm sorry, there's not a lot to to make you happy during the week. So, yes, I have faith that something can happen for the Cubs positively in this year, and that enough bad things can happen to the Giants, Pirates, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Mets, and Padres that it's all worth it.
Yeah, I mean, the line from the aforementioned Sam Miller is that the cool thing about baseball is there's always a decent chance you'll see something you've never seen before in the game, whether it's some, you know, crazy home run or some just super weird defensive play. I don't know. Like, I went to the local, the extremely local team here in the Pickus League last night for a game. I think it's their last homestand in town. And it was pretty rough, but it was still baseball. Still pretty cool. We all had to try to figure out. I think at one point they appealed that a runner didn't touch home and got him called out, and it took about nice. 10 minutes for everyone in the field to figure out what was going on. Other than the pitcher and the catcher, like, both managers were out there to this, like, they were trying to argue, but they were also super confused.
Well, not
saw a pitcher throw a complete game, giving up 8 runs.
Well, nobody else was available that day, right?
That dude was wild, man. He hit 2 batters in the first inning, and he settled down as the game went on. But man, they had no idea where the ball was going. Yeah.
The old effectively wild. Yeah, that's going to be the Cubs' new slogan. They're going to drop "You have to see it" and just change it to "It's still baseball."
I'm amazed that they're still using that hashtag, slightly altered, but the slogan is there. I don't think they're riding it as much as they had hoped throughout the season, but it's still
phrasing, Ken, phrasing.
Okay. But yeah, I think you guys have the right attitude. I really wish I could watch a game. Like, I'm in Chicago, and ironically, I'm just completely blacked out. I can see a Fox game every now and then, and I think our cable plan actually comes with ESPN. I'll have to check the channel yet. So I might be able to catch one in the blue moon, and I still have to do that Odyssey app download. I might just make sure I do that before 2025, but I literally have not seen a Cubs game in a very long time. But I did watch today's condensed game, and it was a lot of fun. And I think the good news is, like, previously, it was just a month plus of just slog. And it was no fun to watch. And now it's like 3 fun games to 1 slog. So that's a pretty good ratio in my estimation. The Cubs are starting to get more fun to watch again. And it's ironic that one of their fun guys, Christopher Morel, is no longer with our team. But you know, they are fun to watch, and they were fun to watch today and yesterday. So not that I watched them live. I watched the condensed games, but that was a lot of fun to watch. It's a lot more fun when the Cubs win, but even when they lose, there are some fun things and good things to take from each loss. And I think Council's been pretty good about looking at the positives while he's just trying to figure out what's going on with this team and basically stubbornly playing players until Jed Hoyer says, okay, I get it. They're bad. I'll get rid of them.
Seeing PCA gets presumably picked off first only to obliterate the rundown and make it back to the base without really even close to a play. That was pretty fun.
That was Javi-esque. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, that's obviously who he was traded for. But anyway, yeah, the rest of the season starts today. We are a couple of days from the trade deadline. We are a few days after that going to August. And it should be a romping good time unless they just decide in the next couple of days to flip Isaac Paredes for somebody else, or I don't know. I feel like in the next 48 hours, give or take, before the trade deadline on Tuesday, we should see something else. You won't hear about it on the podcast because I got to do a show for our company at McCormick Place. But if there's time and you gentlemen are up to it, we can talk about it like pretty much afterwards. But yeah, like, there hopefully is something bigger on the horizon, and then that might give us a little more hope, not just for this year, but for the years beyond.
Pro tip, someone from New Mexico to get the Cubs. One thing you could do is go to Wrigley Field.
Oh, well, yeah, I just need to find the time to actually do that. I live on the south side, so it's a kind of a trick, but it's not too far away. We used to do that all the time. We just haven't had the chance just yet. But I'll take a look at the schedule and let you know which game I plan to go to, because it would be nice to be able to go to at least one this season now that I'm back in town.
Yeah, I went to a game last year. I couldn't believe it. It had been a decade since I've been to a game at Wrigley.
Oh, yeah. It's been more than that for me. I imagine in the next couple of years, I'll probably go. But watching games on TV or just, you know, on replay it has become so much easier than going to a game, and so much more visually stunning than it ever used to be. And I am lazier than I ever could have imagined I could be. And I, like Han, have quite an imagination. it just hasn't happened, but yeah, I think it would be fun. I'm curious, do you guys think the Cubs are done? Do you think they're going to make any other moves? Myself, I think Jed's announcement was kind of is like, yeah, I'm pulling away from the table, and I don't think I'm going to eat anymore. But what do you guys think?
I hope he does something else, because if he kind of, well, you remember that year that they traded Samardzija for Addison Russell and everybody else? Oh, yeah. Did they do something at the tail end of that, or no? Because it was like they just basically jumped the table for everybody. It was like the 4th of July. And then I guess they were done, right? Because I don't remember anything else except that for them that year. It's like they decide, okay, I'm going to do something. I did it. Now I can focus on something else. So there's a non-zero chance that this is completely done. But there's also a chance, considering like Toronto's continuing to sell. They just traded Danny Jansen. They traded Pearson to Chicago. And there's a couple of expiring contracts. Everybody's looking for pitching. So you never know when the Cubs will decide to do a Nomar trade. I don't think anybody's of that elite status, like, you know, when the Cubs got Nomar and then the Red Sox won the World Series anyway. That was a crazy year. But
well, if you really wanted to read into Cody Bellinger not entering the lineup, since he's been able to start hitting, you know, in the cage, and his hand seems to be mostly better. You know, it could be, hey, we're not going to put him in harm's way again if there's still a chance that we might shop him. But I don't think there would be a ton of interest based on, you know, the downturn in his slugging. So many of the trade targets that aren't starting pitchers, I guess Leiter is another one where you kind of see it happening. You know, there's just not a lot of upside for teams who are looking. It's like the whole Nico trade. It's just ridiculous. I don't think there's any chance that he's getting moved. You know, he's extended. That, you know, it's not happening. But I could kind of see, if you read the tea leaves, that Bellinger not going into the lineup yet, since he's been, you know, pretty much pronounced healthy enough to play. It seems like he could play if they really wanted him to, that there might be somebody who's interested in taking that deal off the Cubs' hands.
Yeah, the icky deal that I keep seeing discussed is basically a Bellinger for Blake Snell swap, and I do not like that idea at all. So I hope that does not happen.
That would be the skinniest trade in the history of baseball.
Get Carl Edwards Jr. in there too while you're at it.
Yeah. The 1% body fat trade.
But yeah, I guess we'll blog about it. And if you gentlemen are available and I actually have time after our vendor show, then maybe we can talk about the aftermath. But yeah, it's very close to the end. Like, there is no more waiver trade period. It's July 30th and we're done. So this is it. About Nico, there might be an off-season trade, but I think I agree with you. They're not going to deal him this trade season because it just makes no sense. So I think, this is pretty much it. And it's pretty much it for us as well. You can find us, of course, at obstructiveview.net. You can thank Rich Deanna for a theme song and Randall Sanders for pulling the final out call from the World Series in 2016. Any last words, gents?
No. I was trying to think if I had any.
It's okay. Yeah.
Don't make any plans for the second week of November because the World Series parade is coming.
The subsidy. At least you didn't say it was going to be in Chicago.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, it probably won't be in Chicago. But
you know. A parade is coming. Yeah. And it's an election year, so that should be very interesting November as well. So until then, I say, let's see what the Cubs can do. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs.
It was more than just a game.